everybody, to another episode of Breakfast with the Gators. We're coming to you guys Tuesday night, August 4th. Summerall, a few other coaches and players met with the media today as fall camp begins tomorrow morning, August 5th. How's everyone feeling, Dev?
Pretty good, man. The little bit of a chill in the air this morning, taking the dog out, starting to feel like fall. You're the day before fall camp, man. It doesn't get much better than this. A month away.
Yeah, out in Arizona, can't say there was a chill in the air this morning, but 112 was the high today. But we're getting closer day by day. You know, it's the dog days of summer, which, as brutal as they are, we know they're worth it because it gets us to football. So, just, you know, weeks away almost. So, couldn't be more excited, and definitely starting to perk my ears up a little bit. Try to pay a little more attention to the rumblings, and it'll be here soon enough.
Maybe wish casting that fall chill in the air a little bit.
What were you saying, Jackson?
I said you got your hometown Cardinals playing Thursday night in Canton, the Hall of Fame game. So we've officially got football back this week.
You really couldn't find a better franchise to kick things off.
Well, guys, we're presented by we're part of the State Miguel Network and presented by our partner, Norris & Norris PA. Norris & Norris PA is out of Lake City, Florida, and they are a preeminent law firm serving North Florida since 1985. You can give a guy a call if you need any assistance with business law matters, real estate, wills, or trust and estate planning at 386-752-7240. Well, like I mentioned, to start the show, Summerall, Rusty Witt, Buster Faulkner, Brad White, Jonathan Galante, our special teams coach, pretty much all the coordinators spoke today, along with the head coach and Dallas Wilson and Jaden Woods. You know, we've seen the Fab Five that we wanted to retain, and those two, Ball, Vernell, and Miles Graham. It's kind of been Vernell, Miles, and Ball throughout SEC media days and the summer hype. Now, Summerall gives these two the opportunity to speak. Dev, did you get to listen to any of the coaches or players speak today?
Yeah, I checked it out. I think that it's pretty telling that those are the first two players that we got to hear from in fall camp. The biggest thing that stood out to me was Rusty Witt. I think that that's the guy that that hands the team over to the coaching staff. He spent all summer, all offseason working with the players. And hearing Witt talk about the buy-in from the guys from January to now and how proud he was of the team that he handed back over to the coaching staff, it got me excited, man. I think that those numbers that he talked about, I'm sure we'll get into it more later in the show, but the strength gains, the speed gains, you hope that buy-in in the weight room and throughout the offseason combined with the renewed sense of urgency and the renewed intensity that you're getting from this coaching staff that I think permeated in everything that they talked about today. And a schedule that's, you know, not easy, still top 10 strength of schedule in the country, but that's a little bit easier this year than what we've dealt with the last 2 years. That kind of has you excited, gives you the ability to feel a little bit of optimism going into this year, like you'll get, you know, the first winning season and what is it, since 2024? Only our second since 2021, since COVID.
Right. Sam, now how do you digest that with the players getting faster, bigger, stronger? We hear it every single offseason from every single program. What has it been with Rusty Witt that you've heard so far this offseason, or Summerall's transparency about what he inherited to, you know, present day, what he's seen in that weight room?
Yeah, most of the pressures I saw today was Summerall talking about Witt, and, you know, he's talking, we're moving tons out there, I guess, as you know, he's letting the media know, I think it was, what, 7 tons? So that was pretty sick, but Devin mentioned it, you know, it's so essential to have a really good strength program. They're the guy, they're always with the players. And I think we know how terrible the department's been, for lack of better terms, you know, over years. I think it was, we realized how terrible it was, so bad during the McElwain era, and it seems like we've just been trying to pick it up since then. There's some spurts here and there, but to me, like you said, bigger, stronger, faster, you got to be able to sustain it, play SEC ball, not injuries, because, you know, your depth is your depth, but you got to stay healthy. So yeah, that's what I would say I'm most excited to. How's it going to translate to conference play? Because I think we've seen in some areas where it doesn't look like we're playing the same game when it comes to the strength and conditioning department against some of, you know, the cream of the crop teams in the conference. So just want to see those gains, but it sounds great so far. So hopefully it can translate.
Yeah, I think we all are, you know, holding our breath until we see the on-field results. But I think we can all confidently say no members of this staff will be working at Lowe's, depending on how things go at Florida in the next 3-4 years. So it's been impressive to hear so far. I'm excited to see what reports we get out of fall camp starting Wednesday morning over the next 4 or 5 weeks until we kick off. Dev, we talked to Coach Jonathan Sapphire, the basketball team, and he mentioned the 8-week conditioning program they get in the summer, but they really only utilize about 5 weeks. Summerall was discussing the fall camp program. He mentioned he started this in the spring morning practices. It gives you a little bit longer throughout the day for your body to recover, especially when you do a Friday morning practice. You know, you got a game at Saturday, you get a few extra additional hours to recover. It seems like they're going to go 4 days a week. That intensity is going to be there. But what do you see the similarities of, you know, Coach Golden and Summerall both entering year five as head coaches, one at, you know, Florida for 5 years, and now Summerall fifth as a head coach in general, of what they're doing with their players? You know, they're player coaches, and what kind of feedback they can kind of get from their guys running a program in this direction.
Yeah, I mean, I hope that the plan works in camp. I thought it was interesting the way that Witt broke down the importance of those first 4 days of camp and how they're taking a 4-day break essentially for the first time all year from lifting weights and focusing on keeping hydration up, keeping nutrition right, and then they go right back into being aggressive with maintaining and improving the strength numbers even into the season. He even made the comment, I think, that they're more aggressive than most schools. Like, everybody lifts weights during the season, but they're more aggressive at looking to get stronger as the season goes on. And I thought that Witt did a really made interesting comments about, you know, it seemed like common sense when you hear it in the way that he said it, but the durability that you create in your body by being stronger was something that it's like, duh, of course, if you're a stronger guy, you have a better chance of not getting hurt. But hearing the way that he put it in the press conference today, it makes total sense. You know, I don't think that we're going to have offensive linemen with beer bellies and, you know, offensive linemen going off to the NFL combine and repping 12 bench presses anymore. And that's going to be a welcome sight. So I like the plan. I like everything that they're saying so far. I think that, you know, listening to all of the staff members, I don't really have a feel yet for how the team is going to be. I think that they're excited about the improvement that they've seen, the numbers that have improved strength-wise in the offseason. I still don't get the feeling that they even know yet what the team's going to look like. I think that they have high hopes. They talked about the inconsistency. Certain plays during the spring where you're watching them and Summerall, I think, said that he thought that we could be really good. I think Brad White made the comment that, you know, they got to get through to them that two good plays doesn't mean that you can have two bad plays after that. So the consistency is something that, you know, has eluded us the last few years. And it sounds like they've seen those same flashes that we've seen as fans. And so finding a way to harness that and turn it into a consistently good football team week to week, just judging by the intensity that Summerall brings to the press conference, I imagine he's bringing that to the meeting room and will be on an even higher level once the actual games get here. So doesn't seem like this is a team that's going to come out flat and play flat in games. And so hopefully you see that get reflected and you know, ultimately becomes wins instead of, you know, 4-8s and 6-6s and 5-7s that we've been seeing the last few years.
Yeah, and one of the coaches
kind of hammered that one home.
But just I put on my Will Norris hat.
No, that was not even going that route. You absolutely nailed it, really, in all regards. And just to Jackson asking the question, being a player's coach, kind of like Golden is, you kind of have to in the modern day of college sports. You know, you have to give a little bit if that's what it comes down to. Obviously, we can tell from Coach Summerall, he doesn't deal with any of that. So I think people are getting in line, and just being a player's coach like Todd Golden, you see the retention. People want to play for him. So if you're going to flex the schedule to be more appealing to the kids, make them more healthy for game day, I'm all for it. Hopefully it translates. But, yeah, Devin kind of nailed everything there on the head.
There's a lot of different positions we're going to get into that we're going to keep our eye on during fall camp, what players emerge. but nothing more important than who's going to be trotting out in the field for snap one, week one. That's going to be Tremel Jones or Aaron Filo. Buster Faulkner had a little bit to say about the quarterback position today. Dallas Wilson even had a few comments saying, you know, this offseason, it seems like Tremel and Aaron are together all the time, whether it's on the golf course, in the gym, or on the practice field. It's kind of good to see those two, despite being competitors for this job, to be the starting quarterback at the University of Florida, but also real good friends in the process. I thought the biggest thing that Faulkner said today was what he's going to look for is third down efficiency and 2-minute drills. And those are obviously areas that we have failed in, the sense of urgency offensively, and then third down conversions. I think in the last 3 years, Florida has been 114th, 92nd, and 85th. So we got worse during the Billy Napier era each and every year. While at Georgia Tech, Buster Faulkner the last 3 years was 39th in 2023, 65th. I believe he had some Hayden King's injury issues that year. And then in 2025, his last year at Georgia Tech, 24th in the country. So real high emphasis on being efficient, getting the ball out, moving the chains. Sam, what's your take as we go into fall camp, what you're looking for out of these two quarterbacks? And even, you know, you mentioned Aiden Warner, who's got some playing time as a Gator, and then Will Griffin, who we heard in the springtime, has got a real live arm, big, strong kid out of Jesuit in Tampa. What's kind of your take on the quarterback battle over the next 4 or 5 weeks?
Yeah, you know, they're great friends off the field. Reminds me of a similar quarterback battle going on with my professional team up in Minnesota, you know, just two competitors that are just enjoying each other's company. But no, it is a good thing to see the camaraderie with both of them, but they both know one of them's going to obviously have to, you know, separate and get the job, and hopefully they can hold on to the job and the backup can, when needed, be more than reliable. But it's good to see, you know, I think that brings out the best of them as well on the field. And then, yeah, the talent, Will Griffin, young quarterback, live arm. We'll see if we see that in this season, but to
hopefully we don't
see some clips, you know, in camp, see the arm, that'd be cool. But yeah, it's a pretty balanced room, but ideally, like I said, someone's gonna have to separate themselves. And just about, you know, Faulkner and the offense, I'm really excited, especially because third down, we got so used to the, you know, third and seven, third and eight, give it to Ball, hopefully get 4 or 5 yards and try to do something on fourth down. So hopefully those days are gone. And even if it comes to that, I think with Buster, it's going to be a little bit more effective. So really excited to see the offense. And the 2-minute drill numbers, that's nice.
Yeah, I don't know really how to pull that data online at any websites. You know, we obviously understand how to utilize the analytic websites in college basketball. If anybody's got some insight, make sure you please leave a comment on our YouTube page or Twitter. We'll be greatly appreciative of your assistance.
Never been big numbers guys, but we try.
We try.
Don't make us calculate them. Just put the numbers in front of us, and we can right. We can draw some conclusions from that.
No, not math guys. Right. If you're listening right now, please make sure you're liked and subscribed to our YouTube and Apple and Spotify pages. Leave a comment on our page as well, and follow us on X, formerly Twitter, at BreakfastWTG. We appreciate all of your contributions to this show. Regardless if we have 5 viewers or 500 or maybe 1,000 every once in a while, we appreciate every single one of you that are listening. So, Dev, let's jump to the defensive side of the ball. I know in our we got on here a few minutes prior, Brad White had some quotes that stood out to you. You want to dive into those a little bit?
Man, it was good to hear from a defensive coach that sounded like he had a pulse. You know, it gives you it's such a good feeling to listen to your coordinators, and they have like the lived coaching experience of coaching in the SEC, especially Brad White, 8 years as the defensive coordinator at Kentucky, Buster Faulkner, the last 3 years at Georgia Tech, but the time at Georgia before that. Hearing Brad White make comments like, my goal is to be the most feared defense in college football. The other comment that stood out right there at the end of his press conference, he was getting fired up. You could tell. He said, forget that person across from you doesn't respect you, and you shouldn't respect that person across from you. The goal is to take everything that they have and they want. That's it. If we can get to the point that teams don't want to line up against you, or at least they have a doubt about it, now we've accomplished what we want to do on defense. that's like more emotion and intensity than you've seen from a head coach at Florida for the last 4 years. And that's just our defensive coordinator. It's not our head coach that's threatening to throw podiums at reporters. So hearing that from a guy that has some credibility just walking into the room in the league is exciting. It makes me feel like what you're about to see is a Florida level defense for the first time since probably 2019 ish. And, you know, it just coming into the season, you try to not get your hopes up too much because you don't want to get let down. You don't want your expectations to get out of control. But the staff really does pass the smell test, just resume wise. And the way that they're talking makes you excited about what the team's going to look like. So that's the part from his comments that stood out. It sounded like the kind of defense you want the University of Florida to be playing. And you haven't been able to say that for the last 4 years.
Well, Dev, I think the most important part is that Summerall has touched on bringing Buster Faulkner as an offensive coordinator to Florida. Florida's won with great offenses, whether it's looked like Steve Spurrier's and throwing around the yard, or you can go with Urban Meyer and the spread offense out of the shotgun. Both of those coaches had really good defenses. I mean, some of the top 10 units in the country and some years arguably the best defense in the country. So, yeah, I agree. It is refreshing to hear that statement because Florida has always been built on defense. And, you know, we got pretty lucky with two great head coaches that also knew how to draw plays.
People love to talk about the offense, but the most iconic plays in Florida football history, the major right hit against Oklahoma, the Lawrence right hit against Tennessee, help me out, the Brandon Spikes against Tom Marino. All of the most legendary, iconic hit plays in Gator football. Not all of them, of course, but a lot of them were when Florida was playing badass, nasty defense. And the head coach has made clear he's a defensive guy. He's a former linebacker. He's a little crazy. And you kind of get the feeling that that's the style of defense that they are going to demand. And I don't know if that happens in year one. I don't know if it happens in year two. But I don't get the feeling, listening to the staff talk, that they're going to tolerate anything less than one of the nastiest defenses in college football. And I don't know about you guys, but that fires me up.
No, those comments talking about respect, that was – it's hard not to be fired up. And you can't help but think of players like Jaden Woods when he talks about the defense like that, just being a force on the edge. Miles Graham, Aaron Childs, you know what you're going to get out of your linebackers. You just can't help but think about those guys, you know, having the ability to make some more explosive plays defensively. Because, like, to your point, Devin, so many of our great plays over time are on that side of the ball. And they're game-changing plays, you know, to – like he was talking about breaking the offense's will, essentially. Like, when's the last time we've done that, you know? So especially just competency on defense above all, and just be consistent. Don't play good for three quarters, run out of gas. I feel like we saw that a lot where, you know, the defense would keep us in some Billy Napier games, and then toward the end they just can only hold on for so long. So, and you know that offense can't dig you out of a hole. But, yeah, the defense, very excited to see. And like I said, some of the names that are the returning players, you can't help but think about those guys really just taking a big step forward.
Yeah, and I think we heard from Jonathan Galante back in the spring, not too much in the offseason from the special teams coordinator. And that is too long for our bottom. There we go. I think the most interesting Galante had to say today is that we'll see a lot of starters on punt. I mean, Sam, when you think about the Gators back in the day and Urban Meyer and the special teams we had, we saw Randy Demps, all the speedsters on the edge going after punts. We also had an All-American returner in Brandon James. We've got something similar in Vernell Brown III. He had multiple electrifying punt returns a season ago. What's your outlook for this unit, this team? Dev, I think you had the numbers in front of you. How many players we have running over 21, 22 miles an hour?
56.
So a lot of speed on this team. I don't know how many of those are obviously starters. I would like to think a good majority of them are at least going to have a lot of contributing snaps for this program in 2026. Sam, as a former special teamer yourself at the Key West High, what are your thoughts on Galante's comments and getting that back into the Florida way of playing special teams?
Yeah, as a true special teams believer, you can't help but think of, you know, the OG Gators and some of the plays they were making back then. It's a very important part of it. But to your point, you know, Florida's known on defense, but like back in the day, we're also known for these big time impact plays, kick returns, pump blocks, whatever it could be on special teams. So hopefully we can get a little bit of sense of that. But like you said, playing starters on special teams, I mean, why not? You know, like I know people playing on roster spots, but put some of the best guys out there, especially the gunners on punt return, get down there with speed. And then if they muff the punt, you're going to have players with good hands out there, easy to recover it. But like you were saying as well, over the years, we've seen some of the best players on kick return or other special teams, but that hasn't been really consistent. Obviously we had Kadarius Toney for, you know, a year, year and a half.
When he could catch punts.
Exactly. And then, but then sometimes you'd see Freddie Swain back there, no disrespect to him, but a little bit of a different, you know, type of punt returner. So yeah, knowing that Vernell's coming in as that role, it can't help but being exciting, and you can absolutely scheme some things up for him in terms of how you block on kick return, how you block on punt return. So yeah, I can't help but be excited about special teams, and hopefully the kicker just makes some kicks.
Well, and
that's not the kicker. Kicker's money, by the way.
One of the good things too about having such a deep wide receiver room, a deep wide receiver room with speed guys, is you can afford the luxury of having Vernell Brown back there, and knowing, you know, if he were to get banged up or if he needs to take a series off after a punt return, you got Eric Singleton, you got Dallas Wilson, you got you know, the rest of that room that's ready to carry a load if he gets a big return or, you know, whatever may happen.
That kind of to me goes back to, and say what you will about him, he would play some, I know a lot of receivers would play gunner. I remember Van Jefferson recovered a muff punt. I know he'd have Trayvon Grimes out there running on, you know, on punt kick. So I'm having a deep wide receiver room, you can afford some of those players to kind of go out there, try to make an impact play in maybe an area they normally wouldn't. So I think, yeah, having a deep wide receiver room, you definitely can maybe not necessarily take a risk, but put them out there maybe in some of those situations to see if they can make something happen with their speed or, you know, just force some kind of disruption.
Guys with ball skills and athleticism, once you get them out, like a muff punt, whatever it may be, dudes that are just athletes that are on the field, that's where you see them make plays like that.
For sure. And it just, I mean, like, how many times have you seen, especially in college football, just, you know, there's a lot of muff punts, you know, you create a little pressure, and I don't blame it one bit. That's absolutely terrifying. But luckily for me, I was usually kicking it and then running the other way.
You know, this staff has to be just kind of dumbfounded. I think one of the questions that the special teams coach guy asked today was about having 11 guys on the field for special teams. And he said that he gets asked that all the time by fans. The reaction to that just has to be, what in the world was going on here before we got here? You know, I don't want to keep going on the old staff, but like, hopefully it's not an issue with this staff to the point where you're just like, how in the world could you not get something so basic and fundamental that it becomes something that you get asked about your entire first offseason?
Yeah. I think this staff has self-awareness. Summerall mentioned how hands-on he was at year one at Troy, what he's learned from his first year there to, you know, now in his fifth year as a head coach at Florida, and what's transpired and how he's kind of let others, you know, dictate what goes on in their rooms. I think he was in the Troy defensive coaches or players meetings every single day. So I think they have a real good understanding of who they are as coaches and the people they surround themselves with. Again, I don't think any guys on this staff is going to go work at Lowe's or Home Depot pending their time at the University of Florida. So Another thing that came out, did it come out today, the coaches poll, Dev?
If it wasn't today, it was yesterday.
I'm pretty sure it was today. At least that was the first time I saw it.
Well, I think the Gators checked in at 27, only four or five preseason top 25 teams on the Gators schedule, which certainly is a change of pace from 2025 when we had eight or nine start the season in the top 25. Obviously, we had that stretch of 4 or 5 weeks against opponents in the top 10. Sam, I mean, Gator snubbed from the coaches poll, 27th in the country, or maybe a little too high for those that voted.
Yeah, we were in the others receiving votes category, which is always a fun place to be. But hey, we were second there, so no, I don't think it was necessarily snubbed. Like, you have to go out there and show it on the field first, and then, you know, one of the teams loses in the first week, and then you're number 25 before you know you're playing your second game. I feel like we've seen that in a couple other 10 years here, you know, especially to start the season. So I don't think it was unfairly snubbed. You know, you're just kind of going off of the talent that there is on campus, which I think a lot of us obviously within the team are aware. You know, we got a pretty good squad. I think some of the national media is kind of starting to peek their head up a little bit, but not too much. So I think it's kind of right where you want to be, I think, in my opinion. I don't hate it at all.
Yeah, I'd say it's about right for now. I mean, I think that as Florida fans, we watch the team and we know more about what's going on in Gainesville than the national media does at most points in time.
Do we? We all had them going 9-3 last year, or well, some folks had them 12-0.
I have a counterpoint.
Go ahead, Sam.
Like the Billy Napier stench to be in 27th, coming off of that logo holds weight.
I agree with that. When you look at the roster, I mean, you got a top three, top five running back in the country in college football. You know, that makes the court. Think about how easy Aaron Filo or Tremell Jones's job is going to be this year. You either get to turn around and hand it to Jaden Ball 25 or 30 times a game, or you get to drop back and throw it to guys like VB3 and Eric Singleton and Dallas Wilson 20, 25, 30 times a game. That's not a bad situation to be in. Obviously, there's a lot of question marks with the offensive line. We won't really know what that unit is until week three, at least. Like, Auburn's played good defense the last few years under DJ Durkin, so I expect them to be good defensively. Obviously, it's our first road test, new staff, everything else that's going to go into that Auburn game. But to the point, though, that I'm trying to make is I think for today – this is a talented roster that has a lot of question marks. That means that they're not a top 25 team per se going into the season. But talent-wise, I think that this is a top 15, top 20 roster. And how that shakes out in the final record and whether they deserve to be a top 25 team at the end of the year, you know, it's going to depend on just how they play. You don't get that crown before the season. You have to go out and win ball games.
Dev, you mentioned the luxury factor that Aaron Filo or Tremell Jones will have at the quarterback position. Who emerges out of the big three at that position? You know, we still got Micah Mays, a transfer from Wake Forest. He's a South Florida kid. We've got Bailey Stockton and TJ Abrams returns. Which one of those guys do you think could emerge out of this group?
That's a good question. I thought Micah Mays flashed the most in the spring game. He had the long catch from Tremell Jones on the beautiful ball, as I described it on our last episode. I liked him in the spring game. Obviously a deep threat, ran a good route to get open on that play. I thought Bailey Stockton stood out in the spring game as being just a reliable target. If Aaron Filo's the guy that wins the job, I think Bailey Stockton's stock goes up just because of the familiarity between them two at Georgia Tech. I think that he's a guy that is probably teetering depending on who wins the job. And that familiarity between Stockton and Filo would make me think that he would be that next target.
There was a player on Twitter that posted a fan posted a video of a player, I guess, on Instagram Live or something during the summer, saying Bailey Stockton was like the hardest receiver to guard in the spring.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, in the spring game, I thought that he was the guy that when you needed to get a first down on 3rd and 6, Filo knew exactly where he was going to be and could find him for a gain of 7, a gain of 8. We didn't see him go deep very often. At least he wasn't targeted deep very often in the spring game. But those possession type receivers are valuable. And I think that if this is an offense that you're not going to – it's going to require a lot of timing and you're not going to have an offensive line that lets Filo or Tremell Jones just sit in the pocket for 5, 6, 7 seconds and pick a defense apart. I think that having a guy that's a reliable hands receiver, you know,
sneaky athletic, maybe
coach on the field, sneaky athletic,
big for the brand.
Lunch pail guy, student of the game, however you want to describe him. I think that that role is something that'll be valuable for whoever wins the job.
No, I would agree. I would take Stockton just because, I mean, I'm sure Buster probably has, you know, packages for him already. You know, he knows what he's capable of. So I think he'll be able to scheme him into plays and just be a very reliable target, especially having the familiarity with Philo if it does end up being him. It would be kind of funny if, like, they teeter-totter, like Mays was, you know, Tramiel's guy with the beautiful balls, and then the beautiful balls downfield, excuse me. And then, you know, if it's Philo, then Stockton gets the nod. But I think Stockton is also a little bit of a different than Wilson and Singleton, kind of not super similar to Vernell Brown, not saying that, but can kind of play that similar role in the slot, use them in motion, jet sweeps, all that fun stuff. So I'm thinking Stockton.
All right, before we jump into the last segment of the show, the Gators announced last week that Greg McMahon is joining the staff as some sort of special teams advisor. He was on Tulane staff with Willie Fritz, I think just for a year. John Summerall gets a job. He tries to convince McMahon to stay. McMahon says, all right, I'll coach with you for 1 year in 2024. 2025, he retires, I guess gets bored, watches tape for Galante at Tulane, helps him break down some different aspects of the special teams room. Retires again at the 2025 season. So he's kind of like on the Keith Jackson retirement tour. You know, he retired in 98, but somehow, you know, called the national championship game in 2006 between USC and Texas. So McMahon joins the staff again, called Summerall a few weeks ago, said, hey, can I come and hang out in Gainesville? And someone's like, sure, how long do you want to stay? He said, well, I think to the last game of the season. So experienced guy who's been in the NFL, been at LSU. He was at LSU for 4 years, I think, through 2018 through 2022. Was a part of the New Orleans Saints 2006-2016 coaching staffs, which obviously gave my Falcons just tormented us for a decade. He is famous for he was a special teams coordinator coach the first game back in the Dome on Monday Night Football after Hurricane Katrina when they blocked the punt. So this guy's got a long track record of success. Sam, any thoughts of McMahon joining or know anything about him?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, the Saints blocked punt, not to rub it in more as you as a Falcons fan, but it's an iconic play for many reasons. But I just think, obviously, to just kind of put more resources into special teams, not to, you know, continue to harp on special teams, it is important. And we've lacked in it for several years, and it's frustrating to just not even see basic average special teams play. So to put more resources into it, especially a guy who's been around for a while, seen everything, and then, yeah, how long do you want to stay in Gainesville? Yeah, that's a sick answer. Yeah. Why not? Let him stay as long as he wants.
I mean, some could argue it's the most important aspect of the game. You know, Florida in the 2006 SEC championship game, leading at halftime by 3 scores against Arkansas. Chris Leak comes out, throws 2 interceptions. It's a 1-score game. What do we do on our third drive? It's like 4th and 10 on our own 13, and we run a fake punt with Jamel Cornelius, pick up the first down, and, you know, the rest is history. We go on and beat them. And
we didn't even score on that drive. It was the muff punt that Wandy Pierre Louis put in the end zone.
Yeah, what was it? Something fish muffed it.
Or I can tell you, those muff punts.
That chaos.
Yeah, it's good to get more good football minds into the building. You know, get 11 guys on the field.
Yeah, you think he's going to let that happen?
No, I think he'll walk back into retirement if we let that happen.
Dev, you had the scoop of the offseason, allegedly. Well, I'll say none of us said we are expecting the game.
I want to make clear I did not report that Florida's wearing white throwback uniforms. I reported that I saw a retail white throwback uniform in Dick's Sporting Goods in Gainesville this past weekend. So for the aggregator account, Gators Uni, I'm excited too. I did not report that the Gators would be wearing white uniforms come fall 2026. But that being said, the uniforms do look great. And if Florida does come out wearing white throwback uniforms for homecoming, it was first reported by Devin Connell of Breakfast with the Gators.
This could be our big break, one way or the other.
This is huge.
He also said we're expected to wear them with our orange interlocked UF helmets.
I want to make clear I did not say that either. Unless
I remember you saying that to us, right, Jackson?
I think I recall you posted that in the group chat.
It was never officially reported.
You just said that the way that the Dick's Sporting Goods was advertising it, there were like some orange Gator hats very near, right above it.
I sourced that part of the reporting out to whatever it was, Gators, SZZN, or whatever the accounts were that picked it up.
The UCF student?
Yeah, that guy.
Okay.
Gosh, we're really getting into it.
Did you see any black uniforms or Gator scale green uniforms in Dick's Sporting Goods as well?
No Gator scale green. They do still carry the black Gator uniforms in Dick's Sporting Goods. They had the blue throwbacks, the white throwbacks, the regular blue. There was no orange jersey, and the black jersey was all present. I've done the rounds in Gainesville looking at the bookstore, Dick's Sporting Goods, all the different stores, Alumni Hall, all of them. No free ads, but I the only place that I saw the white throwback uniform was Dick's Sporting Goods on Butler Plaza. So I don't know if that's them leaking the script for the fall, but if there's no orange uniform, no orange jerseys, I'll be a happy man.
I think the last time we wore white alternate uniforms outside of the all white with the white helmet was 2010 Georgia in the overtime game against Chaz Henry. Yeah. We wore the orange helmets with no stripe. It had the Gator scales and then these awkward looking blue, like stripe. I don't even want to call them stripes. I don't even know what they were right here on the shoulder.
It's that old Nike Pro Combat.
Yeah, that's garbage.
Classics.
We all want to know them. I will say I was walking through the UF facility last February after we thumped Tennessee at home. One of these kids, interns that worked there, he took us by the helmet wall. He didn't even know we wore those helmets or who we wore them against, the all orange with the Gator scales, no stripes. So shameful. Glad he's gone. He graduated. I don't think Summerall retained him, but since you have a lack of all knowledge, I hope he is no longer there. And I'm sorry if you are listening.
You know who hurt you, brother?
How are you going to work there and not know what
we do need to? We do need to teach these kids about the history of Gator football a little bit.
Yes. Like, you got to have some sort of understanding. If you're going to show me the Gator wall of helmets, which I already know about, and you can't answer it.
He didn't know who he was hosting, man.
He had no idea.
The lead host of Breakfast with the Gators was in the building. You got to know answers to those kind of questions.
Get tested with anything. But no, the white jerseys, they do look sick. So
they look great. Yeah. They really do. I would be interested to see if they change what, I mean, we've done every variation of the throwback helmet. It seems like every color, white, orange, blue, they would look great with any of them. So it'd be sick.
Yeah, I agree. Thanks, Dev, for first reporting that out. Only if you are right. And if
it's amazing. It is amazing how much Twitter loves uniform talk. Like, as soon as I saw those white jersey, I sent it to you guys. Y'all didn't give me the reaction that I wanted, so I sent it to a couple of other group chats to get like oohs and ahs. And then by Sunday, I was like, I got to share this with the rest of the world before someone else does.
Well, Dev, to be fair,
it was all over the place.
I was at StreamSong this past weekend, so I apologize. I was focused on going low than what the Gators will be wearing in 9 weeks.
Got to stick up with the times.
All right. Mailbag time. We got a few questions coming in. We'll start with John from Tampa. Sam, I'll kick this to you. Should we be worried about Summerall creating a distraction for camp with all of his sound bites and providing us with an unwanted target on our backs?
Nah. Not worried about it. I mean, it's fun for us to see, you know, like more personality, especially just not to talk about the old guy a lot, but you didn't really get a whole lot of that from Billy Napier. It was pretty ho-hum, so I don't mind it. And, like, we should always have a target on our back for good or bad. So I'm not worried about the sound bites. I think it's fun to see. And, I mean, like, you talk about worried about the sound bites, like, everyone wanted, you know, this other guy who we were going after in the coaching search. You don't think that guy would have had a lot of sound bites? So I think it's twofold. Like, it is what it is. He's Summerall showing, you know, making an impression. You can't blame the guy. He's taking over a pretty not great situation at a storied program. So you got to stick your neck out there a little bit. So again, I don't mind it.
Our two greatest coaches in UF history are some of the most hated men in the Southeast. So
if, you ain't got haters, you ain't popping.
We're Florida. We should be loud. We should be obnoxious. We should be hated. We had a robotic loser for a head coach for 4 years. So give me the brash winner, hopefully, that does talk trash and create headlines. So give me that.
Give me
the guy that's going to go on and create, you know, ESPN Get Up segments about whether or not men should be getting pedicures and then throwing shots at Dan Orlovsky on Twitter afterwards. Like, give me the guy that's entertaining, as long as he backs it up and wins.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I will admit, I got a pedicure lined up for Saturday at 10 a.m.
Self-care is important.
Very important. Been trying to tell you guys that for years. All right, Jake from New Orleans. Who do you think will start in the secondary? We got some new additions. Kanye Clark, the transfer from UCLA. I believe he's going to be battling out the star position versus Bryce Thornton. I know Thornton is athletic. He can move around, play the safety position as well. I think he will be battling Cam Dooley at the opposite of the safety from DJ Coleman, the transfer from Baylor. And just to catch you up back at the speed, Cam Dooley is a Kentucky transfer that is following Brad White. Ben Hanks seems like he's taking the jump. I recall Dallas Wilson had a good quote about him, how much of a leader he's become, how much strength he has gained this offseason. He flashed at times in 2025 as a freshman. The question is, who's going to line up opposite of him? It's going to be Flowers, Cormani, Dijon, who's coming back from injury. I think Summerall provided an update on him and his availability here the first week or two of fall camp. Dev, how do you see that position group line up? Because we know we're pretty solid in the front seven. We know who's going to be those starting pieces, especially in the linebacker group. The question marks on the defense is in the secondary.
Yeah, I like the cornerback room a lot. I think that we're too deep with guys that can play at this level. I think Cormani and Ben Hanks are probably the two leaders right now, just because Dijon Johnson's coming off that injury. I know that he played the most last year, probably has the most returning experience of those three guys. But I like all four of them. I think that Javari Flowers flashed last year. I think Cormani McClain might be the most talented guy in the room, might be one of the most talented corners in the country. And hearing that he had such a good offseason gets you fired up about what kind of jump he can make this year. Ben Hanks, I think, has been really good since he's gotten on campus too. So that the corner room, I think you're too deep. You have four guys that you feel really good about, you know, on a down-to-down basis, being able to execute the defense and do their job. There's a little bit more of a question mark. Obviously, Bryce Thornton coming back. I think they gave him the number one. So they obviously like you read into numbers all you want, but he was obviously a leader in the secondary, a guy that you would think is a returning starter, a guy that's going to play a lot of downs and be a productive player for us. You heard Coach Summerall in the spring talking about Kanye Clark. He called him a chihuahua, I think. I don't know if that's a compliment or not, but
he seems like he's pretty annoying back there, which is a good thing for a
a pesky kind of guy.
Yeah.
So
if he's playing in the nickel, I like a chihuahua.
Yeah. Yeah. So like Kanye Clark, like the way that he's been described, he's another guy that you kind of have to wait and see before you draw any major conclusion. DJ Coleman had an interception in the spring game. I think he's a guy that you kind of keep hearing about from guys around the program, that he's playing well, that he looks the part, that he's performed in practice. And, you know, that's a guy that you're just going to have to see it on a game day. And Cam Dooley in that room, you wouldn't think that Brad White would have brought him along if he wasn't able to play at this level. You're not going to just bring in filler guys to Florida. There's plenty of options if you don't believe in him.
Summerall was transparent about his Tulane guys. I'm sure he had the same message from Buster Faulkner and Brad White.
Right. And I kind of feel that way about all these guys. We touched on a little bit of the offensive line last week, but when you bring in a Harrison Moore, you bring in the TJ Shanahans and the, Enoch Winoy. Yeah,
Stanford.
No. The kid from Penn State, the tackle.
Okay.
When you bring in these guys that played for the prior school, that they coached at their prior stops, you think that they've seen, you know, promise in those guys. So I kind of give a little bit more of a leniency to the evaluation that these new position coaches and new defensive coordinators, offensive coordinators, everybody's bringing to bring those guys along with them. So I'm excited, man. I think that I'm high on the defense. They're top 10 in the country in returning production. I think it's like 67 or 77% of the returning defensive production from last year's back this year. And I think that that's a recipe for success. So I'm excited to see how the defense plays.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. It's going to be interesting. It's going to be, the schedule came out of media availability. I think they get like the first 26 or 27 minutes of practice a few times a week. I don't know about how many days a week they'll be out there, but obviously a lot of reports, a lot of sources will go out and inform us of what's going on. We'll have some guests on later this fall camp that will be at practice to provide us a little bit more insight that we can provide you. So make sure you're liked and subscribed to our channel. Follow us on Twitter, Apple, Spotify, YouTube. We greatly appreciate all your support. And a lot of good things are coming over the next month before we officially kick it off, I believe September 5th. So by the time most of you guys listen to this, we'll be exactly 1 month away. A lot of exciting things. First kick is 7:45, September 5th. So make sure you're tuned in to Breakfast with the Gators all fall. We've got it, not just football, hoops starting in November. You know, the latter half of the football season, and we've got some pretty good guests coming on this fall as well before basketball tips off. So we appreciate all the support. Anything else to add, Dev or Sam?
No, man.
We made it. Great way to start it off. 1 month.
All right.
Football's officially back as of Thursday. Yeah. So
we're here. We'll see you guys again next week for another episode of Breakfast with the Gators. Go Gators.
Go Gators.